Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles.
Well, that lasted the 27 years before we found Christ.
This is Focus on the Family Minute, and Kathy Bush reflects on how she tried many things to find fulfillment before she met Jesus.
And it wasn't only, you know, we filled that hole with drugs and alcohol and infidelity, but also I was filling it. I would go to college and take college classes. I would go to self-help seminars. You know, it was just that constant search. And then after Christ took us to our knees, which he basically did Tim, which brought me, it's like the search was over. We found our purpose.
Hear more from Kathy and her husband Tim at familyminute.org.
Focus on the Family on AM 1230 KPRL and 99.3 FM is brought to you by Sculptera Winery and Sculpture Garden. The Franco family and staff invite you to visit their beautiful world and taste their award-winning estate wine. Open daily 10 to 5 on Lanay Road in Paso Robles. Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location. Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online. DeltaLiquidEnergy.com.
Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story, brought to you by Frontier Floors and Window Coverings at 830 21st Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-7878 or online at frontierfloors.net.
The Rest of the Story. Plainfield, Connecticut, the morning of Tuesday, November 26, 2002. Police got the call from the Jewett City Savings Bank in Central Village. A hostage crisis. Squad cars converged. The situation was assessed. It had the look of a long standoff. From a bank customer service representative, Diane Bolak, who had managed to flee, officers learned how the caper had gone down. The perpetrator had threatened her in the bank's parking lot as she arrived for work at 8:15. He'd had a wild look in his eyes that Diane could see through the rolled-up window of her car, and still, imagining herself safe in broad daylight in this well-trafficked public place, she parked, got out of the vehicle, started to lock the door, but the stranger, eyes wilder than ever, rushed her. Startled, she threw her keys at him, but the ruffian began chasing her and kept chasing her around and around her own parked car until a passerby, a local attorney, Paul Smith, came running to the rescue. And thus challenged, the bank terrorist became one. Nobody inside dared leave. Nobody outside dared approach. So police called for backup, a special unit headed by Officer Teresa Foss. In minutes, Foss and her men were at the scene, establishing a command post. Somebody reported that a suspicious itinerant had been prowling the neighborhood as recently as yesterday. A Pine Street resident named Nadine Hoyt had made contact with him, had even offered him food. So Ms. Hoyt was summoned from her job at Plainfield's Town Hall. And she confirmed the story. She said she'd found the stranger sleeping in her garage. His name, she said, was Benny. Officer Foss replied, "Well, he knows you. Talk to him." So Ms. Hoyt got on the bullhorn. "Is that you, Benny? This is Nadine." Trying to sound calm, trying to make surrender sound easy, but it was no dice. The bank customers, employees, remained prisoners. Now it's going on noon. Foss decided to move in, and so, with officers stationed on the bank's roof, special ops advanced from either side. It was, of all people, a civilian, a construction worker named Donald Tyrolt, who prevented a getaway, grabbing Benny and holding him for authorities as he tried to escape. The motive for his frightening escapade was never confessed, but folks in eastern Connecticut conjecture even still that once upon a hostage drama out on Route 12, a deranged desperado made a grand Hollywood-style stand on behalf of kin on death row. For the producer, director, and star of his very own Dog Day Morning, who for most of 4 hours thwarted every attempt at capture with jabbing beak and slashing claws, was at last arrested by Officer Teresa Foss, Animal Control Officer Teresa Foss, who then released into a nearby state forest preserve 20 pounds of trouble they called Benny, a defiant 95% psycho wild turkey, almost certainly protesting the 48 hours upcoming day of slaughter that we call Thanksgiving. Only now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on the right choice, KPRL.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Vealey, your host on Wednesdays and Thursdays. And before we took the top of the hour break, I gave a little explanation about what happened with ICE. And I have Deputy Clint Cole. He is the county's impressive cold case detective. I'm going to have him talk about a little bit about what we spoke about before we get back to the cold cases. During the break, he told me a fascinating story about issues that he had with this. There's a large network of people. It's funded through nonprofits, mostly government money, and the money is being spent to train people to chase around ICE or other law enforcement in the area. And many of the times when they do go after, they're not going after ICE. They see somebody, they know it's law enforcement, they get a tip, and then they send their volunteers over to blow whistles or to confront them and demand warrants. So when you were working on the Kristen Smart case this summer, remember Kristen Smart case may be over. They're still trying to find the body. Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, I will briefly. First of all, the Kristen Smart case is not over. Myself and the sheriff's office are working diligently to try and bring Kristen home to her family. Working on a location, at a location in the summertime where I had a search warrant to be there, signed by a judge. It had nothing to do with anything but the Kristen Smart case. Nothing to do with immigration, anything like that. We don't get involved in those things. I was at a location on the Kristen Smart case. The location I was at, the folks were cooperative. They did not have any immigration workers or field workers or anything like that. There was nothing going on. But because of where we were, some people got scared, I guess, and the word spread that law enforcement was on scene at a location. And I guess before trying to find out what we were doing or whatever, we, in a matter of an hour that we were there, the first hour, we had three different groups of subjects come up and approach us, step onto the property that they had no access to be on, and demand what we were doing, demand to see my identification. I couldn't get the guy to leave until I actually showed him my ID, assured him this was not anything to do with immigration, that it was a local criminal case, but it wasted 30 to 45 minutes of our time just trying to get them to get away so we could finish doing our job.
And that is problematic, especially if you are, I mean, in that one, it was a cold case, and you were just looking for evidence. But if it had been a murder suspect, that could actually be dangerous.
Oh, yeah. So in our situation, luckily, as you said, it was low key what we were doing. But in a situation, if it was, let's say, a fresh homicide and we were serving a warrant to take the suspect into custody and you have three different groups of interference coming up at you, it's extremely distracting and dangerous for everybody.
And that is, I think we're going to have a lot more of this going on. Following the things in Minnesota, the group has had a ton more more volunteers. They were actually handing flyers outside the county building yesterday during the supervisor meeting. Yellow flyers asking people to help report ICE agents. So they are growing in their numbers, and I think there's going to be much more of this as we move forward. But let's get back to the cold cases. So what was the first cold case that you were able to solve when you first became a cold case detective?
So I got the position working primarily on cold unsolved homicides in 2017. And the first two we solved, they were separate homicides, 2 months apart in the city of Atascadero. In the 70s, the sheriff's office had jurisdiction before Atascadero Police Department was formed. And so Jane Antonez was killed in November of 1977, very brutal rape and murder. Her body was found in her car out on Santa Barbara Road, north of Atascadero. There's homes there now, but it's just off the 101 freeway. And then a month later, in January of 78, another lady, Patricia Dwyer, was killed inside of her home off of Del Rio Road in the same very brutal manner, was also sexually assaulted. And so we were able to solve that case with semen collected in 1977 and 78. Once again, they really had no clue about DNA in the 70s for sure. And they were collecting it because they could get typing out of it as well. Our department preserved it, and we were able to identify the suspect who killed both ladies. Arthur Rudy Martinez was his name. And as soon as he killed our two ladies, he fled to Washington, where he got into prison up there, escaped, lived a healthy life for like 15 years, got cancer, and then moved back, turned himself in so that he could get back into the Washington prison system for free medical care. But he was never swabbed by anybody once he turned himself in. And so we did a familial search, and his brother was in the CODIS data bank. So that's how we identified Arthur, got a huge break, went to his former girlfriend's house where he lived while he had been escaped, and she still had his razor, which had his skin follicles on it. So 2 years later, she still had his medicine cabinet items in the bathroom as if he were still there. So we collected the toothbrush and the razor. We used the lab used the razor, and we got a 1 in 250 quintillion that it could be anybody else. And so that was the first one that Detective Rabashadi and I solved in 2019, was the Jane Antonez and Pat Dwyer cases.
And how did the families react when that happened?
You know, the families on Patricia Dwyer's side, there wasn't a lot of family still alive. Her sisters, she had some nieces. They were happy to hear the news, but they weren't super involved. In Jane Antonez's case, she had a brother and a sister still alive. I spoke mainly with the brother. The brother was super appreciative. It's weird what, you know, what people think in times of these horrible crimes. But although Pat and Jane didn't know each other, they knew the same circle through the Atascadero State Hospital. And so her brother, Jane's brother, was just so happy that the killer wasn't known to the family.
Oh, wow.
That was what everyone always thought. And their original suspect, who was cleared by DNA, by us, who failed a polygraph in 1977, wasn't the suspect. He was cleared by DNA, but he knew both girls. And so they looked at him, and we later cleared him. But they were just super excited. It wasn't someone they knew. It's really weird. That was the best. That was the most important part to them.
What's scary to me is that the polygraph could be that wrong.
You know, polygraphs, there's a reason they're not allowed in court. They are a tool. I like to, and most law enforcement refers to them as a tool. Can they be accurate? Yes. Can some people fail them just because they're nervous? Absolutely, because it's monitoring your respirations, your heart rate. And so, yeah, you can get an inconclusive or a failed polygraph and be innocent, and you could also pass one. Certain narcissistic, you know, sociopathic people can actually convince themselves they didn't do it, and they could actually pass one. So it's just a tool that I don't take too much weight either way. And the reasons is I just explained why. And I've had other cases where people failed a polygraph and they were not the suspect. There are polygraph examiners nowadays that do a very good job and are a little more accurate. It just kind of depends on, you know, the person and the examiner. But I take them with a grain of salt.
But it was, the family is very happy now that it's over, it's done. But it also is good for the county as the numbers keep going down.
Oh, yeah, no, and that's why Sheriff Parkinson got this position, is we had 43 designated homicides. We have another 15 or 20 career missings, we call them, that could be homicides, and several unidentified remains that were located in our county that one for sure is a homicide. He has a bullet hole in his skull. And so it's very important to work on these cases for many, many reasons. Closure for the family, identifying them, all that stuff is super important. But we also, you know, want to clear them out for legal reasons, as I explained earlier, through the Department of Justice.
So you finished the case in Atascadero. What was the next cold case that you solved?
It wasn't a cold case, but I was one of the lead investigators on the local Nancy Woodrum case. That was a 2018, the lady that was taken from her home.
Can you describe that for the listeners?
Yeah, so Cinco de Mayo, May 5th of 2018, Nancy Woodrum was reported missing by her family. She was a local hairdresser, very popular, very well known. She was in the process of selling her house. There was some escrow work being done, and a painter who was painting at the location came one night, broke into her house, sexually assaulted her and killed her, and then dumped her remains out in the Carrizo Plains. And so I was one of the lead investigators on that. That was because that was a fresh homicide, our whole detective bureau worked on that case. That wasn't just me. There were lots of people who helped on that case. But that was a fresh one. The next one is Kristen Smart. It certainly isn't deemed cold. because it was always active, but it kind of falls into the cold case thing.
Very old.
Because it's old. Yeah, you know, 1996. And so we convicted, as most people know, we convicted Paul Flores without Kristen's body. A great prosecution by Chris Prevel, the prosecutor. And our, once again, lots of help from other detectives in our office. District attorney investigators helped as well. And then the next one, I believe, is the Dorothy Tate case that we recently solved that we're talking about today.
And then you have the two children.
Yes. So the two girls, Teresa Flores and Martha Mizo in San Miguel, were working diligently on that case to solve it. That is such a frustrating case. We've worked so hard. We've got the best genealogist in the country working on it. We have DNA evidence. We have hair evidence, and we just haven't caught that break yet. But that case, we work on every day.
And you had some people that you were having checked recently. Did that come back that they were not the suspect?
We still haven't got those results back yet. I'm expecting those results back this week. If not this week, for sure next week. There was a local child molester who lived in San Miguel near the two girls in 1980. I'm not going to mention his name because he's not an official suspect at this time. But we need to clear him because he knew the girls. He was convicted of child molest later on. And so that is what we're waiting on right now.
Is he alive still?
No, he is deceased as well. But we got family members' DNA that we can compare through genealogy to our hair we're working on and the other evidence we have.
We're going to take a break, a word from our sponsors, and we'll be back with more with Clint Cole.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks ending mixed following the Fed's decision on interest rates. As expected, the central bank is leaving its benchmark rate unchanged at 3.5% to 3.75%. Fed Chair Jerome Powell.
Since last September, we have lowered our policy rate 75 basis points, or 0.75 percentage point, bringing it within a range of plausible estimates of neutral.
Two Fed governors, Stephen Miron and Christopher Waller, dissented from the decision to hold rates steady. Both prefer to see rates lowered by a 0.25 percentage point. After the closing bell, Meta, Microsoft, and Tesla headlining the big tech earnings blitz. Tech was the best performer among the S&P 500 sectors, while healthcare lagged. The Dow winners, United Health, Caterpillar, and Goldman Sachs. The Dow decliners, Amgen, Home Depot, and Honeywell. The Dow up 12 points, the Nasdaq higher by 40, S&P 500 down 0.5%. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
I'm alpine skier Michaela Schifrin. I've won the most World Cup ski races in history. But what does success mean to me? Success means discipline. It's teamwork. It's the drive and passion inside of us. And it's why Stifel is one of the fastest growing global wealth management firms in the country. If you're looking for success, surround yourself with the people who will get you there. If you're an advisor or investor, choose Stifel, where success meets success.
Stifel Nicolaus & Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
Past performance is no indication of future results. Investing involves risk. Consult a financial advisor before making any investment decision.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
We're here to help. At At Peak Painting, we get it. Hiring contractors can be frustrating. Missed calls, no callbacks, endless waiting for even a price. We do things different. You can book your quote right on the spot. And to top that off, you will have a detailed quote and price before we leave. Painting is easier with Peak.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peekpainting.com.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775, 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
Welcome to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veeley, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. I'm also an investigative reporter with Cal Coast News. Go to Cal Coast News. There is no paywall. And today I have cold case detective Clint Cole with the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office. We are going over some of the cold case murders that they have solved. And now we're going to go and we're going to finish with one of those, just a little explanation. And then we're going to talk about three other cases he is currently working on. So the two young girls, let's just remind people what happened in San Miguel. What was the year again?
It was May 17th, 1980 in San Miguel. It was about 11 to 11:30 in the morning. Little girls were downtown, had just left the area of the Alcorn Bar, which we all know still exists. And we're walking, there's two witnesses that claim southbound on Mission towards Martha, the youngest one's house, who was 4 years old, which is in the thousand block of Mission Street. And then another witness saw them potentially walking across the railroad tracks towards Teresa's house, which was just north of 11th Street. But they vanished at that time frame in broad daylight, Saturday morning. San Miguel was fairly busy downtown. It's still to this day unknown, no known real strong persons of interest. I always urge anyone in San Miguel who lived there at the time or knows somebody who lived there at the time to call us. The detective's main number is 805-781-4500. If you have any information relating to this case, we are doing genealogy. I strongly believe that somebody somewhere knows something. It's hard to believe that somebody somewhere doesn't know something.
And you do have one suspect that you're looking at DNA now. You should know within 2 weeks.
Yes, we do have a person of interest, and I want to specify he's more of a person of interest. He was a convicted child molester. He lived in San Miguel. He knew the girls. I don't feel strongly about him, just based on stuff I'm not going to expand on. But that's not how we solve cases. We don't solve cases based on what I or others think. We solve them with DNA. And so we do have DNA that's being processed, and we should know, hopefully, no more than 2 weeks on whether it's him or not.
And now I'm going to ask you about a number of other cases. Let's start with the 1976 case. This was a Paso Robles woman, Charlene, how do you say her last name?
Garelli.
Can you tell us what happened there?
Yeah, so Charlene Garelli was a local Paso Robles girl, went to Paso Robles High School. In reading some of the comments when we solved the Dorothy Tate case, on social media posts, several people were asking about Charlene's case. So I'm glad to have the opportunity to kind of give a public update. Charlene Gorelli's case is very active. We work on this case as well. Charlene Gorelli went to Cuesta College, in September she was last seen at the old McDonald's parking lot on Foothill Boulevard. I believe the building's still there. It's vacant, but there was a McDonald's on Foothill Boulevard, and it's down from like the new fancy shopping center that's down there and where they rebuilt everything. Anyway, that's where her car was found. Some witnesses saw her at a gas station nearby. Her car had broke down, which there were mechanical issues with the car, and only her dad knew how to get it back started when it happened. And Charlene was never seen again. Once again, this is 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, downtown San Luis Obispo. She just disappears. 30 days to the day, she is found up on the Cuesta Grade near the TV towers. Partially clothed, most likely sexual assault is a motive, but due to decomposition, it was unable to be confirmed. And we do have a little bit of DNA in this case. It's something that I'm still working on. There's family in town that are very gracious and patient with us, knowing we have other cases as well. I want to reassure them, if they're listening, that we are still working on Charlene's case. I'm looking to see if there's enough DNA to do genealogy. And so Charlene is, that one's a special one because she was a local Paso Robles girl. She went right here to Paso Robles High School.
And that is, do you have the DNA at the lab right now? Are they looking at it and trying to find if they can work with it?
They've finished the regular lab work. What I have to do now is see if there's enough DNA to then process for genealogy. Because there wasn't enough DNA to upload to CODIS. We can direct compare. So if we develop persons of interest, then we can direct compare that once we get their DNA. But with genealogy, we have such a wider pool of ways to identify people that's what I'm leaning towards doing right now.
How old was Charlene when she died?
She was 19. She had just turned 19, graduated high school in the summer, started Cuesta, just a total local girl. Some of her family still lives right here in Paso Robles.
And let's now talk about Cheryl Manning. Was she a local girl?
Cheryl Manning was not. Cheryl Manning was from Oregon. She was down in Southern California area. She was a hitchhiker. And so she was hitchhiking. She had sent a letter from Southern California to Oregon saying, I'm going to be hitchhiking home. And her body was found just on the north side bottom of the grade.
In 1976?
78 for Cheryl. Okay. Cheryl was found in 1978 right along the railroad tracks. If you're coming down the grade towards the North County, there's a little pullout there that the railroad uses and PG&E and those type of folks use. And it's kind of overgrown now. She was found right there along the railroad tracks. And I do believe we know who that suspect is. We just haven't had enough DNA to confirm it yet. We're working on that. We've got some other pieces of evidence to test. There was a serial killer in Santa Barbara County by the name of Thor Christensen.
Thor Christensen. Did he pick up hitchhikers?
That was his MO, was he picked up hitchhikers who looked very similar to Cheryl Manning, straight, long, dark hair. They were all college-age girls. They were all hitchhiking. And he shot them in the side of the head with a .22 long rifle. And
did he sexually assault them also?
Yes. Thor was sexually assaulted every one of his victims. And after he was convicted of the Santa Barbara killings and one in L.A. County.
How many total?
There were three in Santa Barbara County, one in L.A. County. And I believe Cheryl Manning is 100%. We can put Thor Christensen in San Luis Obispo via a hotel receipt at the time Cheryl Manning went missing.
Is he alive currently?
No. So in the 80s, he was convicted of the Santa Barbara cases, and he was killed in Folsom Prison within 2 weeks.
Wow. So this man is there, but again, the family, I'm sure they want closure.
Yes, they. I haven't spoke to the family recently. They're on my list of things to do to contact them because we do are looking into genealogy on that. Speaking with CeCe Moore, who did the genealogy work on the Tate case, she has worked on Thor Christensen's genealogy because he's a serial killer, and so other agencies are also looking at him. And his M.O.s were very consistent. When he kidnapped the girls, he would shoot them, drink beer, and discard the beer cans near the body, and his sexual assault was usually always after death.
Oh, that's creepy.
Yeah. No, Thor was a bad guy.
And he would shoot them in the side of the head. Can they also look at the bullets and see if they're similar?
They can, and they have done, back in the day, 78 through 1980, they did do that. And the problem was Thor had different guns, and so that's something that I'm going to relook at as well. Because we do have the shell casing that, the bullet that shot Cheryl Manning. And Santa Barbara detectives have been very helpful with us because they had so many victims of this guy. He's from Solvang.
So he is from Santa Barbara County.
Yes.
And that was, for those that are younger, back in those days, hitchhiking wasn't like it is now. It was fairly common for young people even to hitchhike to school if they missed the bus.
Yes. Hitchhiking is pretty, not near as popular now, you know, due to the crazy world we live in. Back in the 70s and the early days, that was how a lot of people got around, was hitchhiking.
Why do you think they have not solved this one before, considering it is so close to this what this man was doing?
One of the reasons we haven't solved Thor's case is, so I mentioned he always discarded beer cans at the crime scene. So laying next to Cheryl Manning's body are 8 or 10 Budweiser beer cans, which is what he drank in Santa Barbara. And we've tried to get DNA from those, but it was too degraded. We weren't able to get enough for CODIS upload or to compare to like his brother's blood who we have, but there may be enough. I have an email from the DOJ lab in Goleta. I haven't read it yet this morning because I've been kind of busy, but I have an email from the DOJ lab to let me know how much DNA they have from those beer cans. And genealogy only needs 1 nanogram of DNA, which is not a lot. So if there's at least one nanogram of genealogy, of DNA, then we get that processed, get that to CeCe Moore, and she's already got Thor's family tree built, and And that case could solve very easily if we have enough DNA for the SNPs to do genealogy.
So this would be another great one to take off the books.
Oh, yes. Well, yeah, I like to take as many as possible. And we're really close on several of these. You know, it's just you got to get that lucky break.
Does it also, is it a lot to do with time and backups at the labs? We're gonna have Clint answer that question when we come back after a word from our sponsor. And I notice we have a guest waiting also. I will get your call as soon as we come back.
With the big, beautiful bill comes new tax laws, and for business owners, that means more rules, more details, and more chances to miss important savings. This is Billy Gallant with your locally owned and operated H&R Block offices. We stay on top of every tax law change so your business stays compliant and keeps more of what it earns. From deductions and credits to full business tax preparation, our experienced tax professionals handle it all with accuracy and personal service you can trust. Don't let new tax laws cost your business time or money. Call your local H&R Block office today to make an appointment and get your business taxes done right.
When it comes to sustainable energy systems and service, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Marilyn from Templeton says, quote, Solarponics installed our system almost 20 years ago. There are occasions when your system needs to be serviced. With Solarponics, work is completed quickly with knowledge and skill. This is as important a part of a solar company as the original installation. Thank you, Marilyn, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing a lifetime of as important service. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners. Is your water heater over 7 years old? If so, replace it with a heat pump water heater before it fails and save thousands in energy costs. Plus, new rebates cover up to 80% of the cost. Call or click to get a free, no-hassle quote today. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
The Tuesday Farmers Market on 11th Street next to the downtown City Park in Paso Robles is open 9:30 a.m. to 12 p.m. Stop by and get your farm fresh local seasonal produce. Fall and winter produce is here with strawberries, leafy greens, winter squash, artichokes, avocados, honey, meat, and so much more. You can even get fresh baked bread, scones, and soup. Check out other North County farmers markets in Atascadero on Wednesdays, Templeton on Saturdays. The market is open, rain or shine, unless weather conditions are too dangerous.
Welcome back to Sound Off. My name is Karen Veeley, your host on Wednesday and Thursday afternoons. Today I have Clint Cole. He's a cold case detective with the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department. Him and his team, you want to give a shout out to your team? Who's on the team?
Yeah, well, there's several people that deserve a shout out. My partner, Jeff Robichotti, who Jeff and I have worked together at the sheriff's office for 35 years. He also monitors our sexual registrants, but he also has time to assist me. And he's been very helpful when I've been busy on other cases, such as the Smart case, to keep working. He did a tremendous amount of work on the Dorothy Tate case. And also Shelby Liddell, our crime lab technician. She's amazing. She does great work for us. She does a lot of work behind the scenes and doesn't get a lot of public credit that she deeply deserves. So I want to thank them both.
Well, you guys are doing a great job. And this is a hard thing. I don't think I've ever seen a department that just kept doing one after another. It is very, very impressive. Let's talk about one more case. So in 1990... you found a John Doe in San Simeon. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so in 1990, investigators and deputies got a call of found remains in San Simeon over a very deep bluff. excuse me, that went down to the ocean. It appeared the suspect was thrown over during high tide. He was in black trash bags with some weights. And then when the low tide came, he was eventually found and looked like he had been deceased for quite a while. He was heavily decomposed. He has never been identified, and we are looking to identify him through genealogy as we talk. They're working on it. We believe he has relatives in the state of Washington. We've reached out to a couple of those. There is one that's helping us. Others, you know, in today's world, people think you're a scam or something, so it's really hard to get people to talk to you. And so, but we do have one relative helping us, and Parabon and Cece Moore and her team are looking to identify him. He is of Lebanese ancestry, and he has roots, we believe, from the Los Angeles area. Other than that, it's a real kind of another whodunit. But
how was he killed?
He was killed by
I can tell you're being worried a little bit about saying it. Sounds like it must be ghastly.
It is a little grotesque. He was cut by a chainsaw.
So he was in multiple bags.
He was in two bags, yes.
Oh, that's horrid.
Yes, it was not a pretty way to go. Somebody was deeply angry.
And how old do you think this person is?
We believe he's in his mid-30s at the time of his death. He had a special kind of necklace on that had kind of like a unicorn charm at the end of it. And so we're, you know, if we can get somewhere with the genealogy, or even if we don't, we may be doing some public media releases to try and see if we can stimulate identifying him if we're unsuccessful with the genealogy. Because of that pendant, it was a very unique kind of unicorn type pendant. And with the Lebanese ancestry, you know, I believe that's a kind of a tight-knit group of people. And so at some point, we may be reaching out to you and other media outlets to help us try and identify this guy.
Oh, we absolutely will. So you've already, though, tracked him to some people in L.A. and some people in Oregon. Could you call if you have someone you really want to talk to, could you call law enforcement there and say, would you mind going by and explaining we're not scamming, we're trying to solve a cold case?
Yes, and that's what we do. We will get a hold of local law enforcement and have them send a uniformed officer out that's much more official and say, hey, this detective is a real detective. He's trying to get a hold of you. Can you please call him at this number? Yeah, that's pretty much how we have to do it. And I understand people. I mean, I don't answer my phone. And when somebody crazy sounding like, you know, me saying, hey, I'm calling to talk to you about a 1990 murder case, you know, a lot of people just hang up, and I don't blame them.
And the difference is, I think, in this day and age, there's so many scams claiming they're law enforcement.
Right.
And it's so sad when people fall for them, but it's the amount of scams, people just ignore things.
There's scams where people are losing millions of dollars, trusting that it's law enforcement association doing special work. You know, it's a million things that people come up with to scam people, and I don't blame them. It's frustrating, but I don't blame them.
And this one's very interesting because you have no idea who it is.
Right.
Not only do you not know who did it, you don't even know who this is.
No, and it's virtually impossible to solve a homicide without knowing who your victim is.
So after you find the victim, then you have to talk to family and find the circumstances.
Right.
But this is a very violent person.
This is very violent. It, you know, could it Could it be, you know, we could speculate forever, but, you know, for somebody to be killed the way this guy was killed, it definitely made somebody very angry. Definitely not just your, you know, fly off the handle, fly off the handle and shoot somebody in a fit of rage. This was well planned out.
So you believe this was an orchestrated murder, and then they were put in bags, dumped in the ocean, and they floated up?
I believe definitely that there's a strong chance this was very orchestrated, and can't wait to try and find out for sure.
How did they find, were both bags close to each other?
They were. Because they were weighted, they stayed close together. They had large rocks and weights in them, and so they stayed pretty close to where they appeared to throw them. There was some items left up on top of the bluff where they threw him, and he was pretty much directly straight down. And, you know, it looks like it took a few days before he was found, because it was a remote area. But luckily somebody saw when the tide was low, and they saw the bags, and they actually climbed down there and, you know, saw a sight I'm sure they wish they had never seen.
They probably wish they'd called law enforcement, then yeah, check it out themselves.
Yeah.
Are there any other murders when you don't know who the people are that you're looking at right now also?
Yeah, we do have two other unidentified homicide cases that I'm not actively working yet. I try to keep it, you know, around six to no more than eight. Just they're hard to keep track of, and there's a lot going on. And even with Jeff's help, but we do have two other homicide victims that are unidentified.
And so when you get a couple done, do you go and look? How do you decide which one you're going to pull out when you have 40?
Well, I went through them all, and I kind of did a chart, a spreadsheet, you know, and I did a scale of 1 to 5, like 1 being least probable to solve, 5 being highest probable. And what we're looking for example, in the Dorothy Toby Tate case, we had blood. We had a Coke can that may or may not have been part of the scene, but then you have fingerprints, you know. So we're looking for cases that have, you know, the potential for DNA evidence, fingerprint evidence, those sorts of things. And in some cases, you know, we have a couple of cases where there was just skeletal remains found. And so, you know, it's not saying we're not going to work on those cases, but we try not to. We've reviewed every case, and we've sent some evidence in, knowing that the Department of Justice lab, who doesn't charge us, takes time because they're doing work for three counties. And so we just go through looking for the cases that look like they have the best leads, usually DNA evidence, fingerprints.
Is the DOJ lab in Santa Barbara County?
It's in Goleta.
Okay. So
yeah,
it's...
They're very, very helpful. They just, you know, they have to prioritize their cases, and I understand why. Cold cases aren't always a top priority, because, you know, if you have a fresh homicide or a fresh sexual assault, those cases should,
oh, absolutely,
go to the top, and, you know, they're working for several counties.
No, that absolutely makes sense. I want to thank you very much for coming on and giving us an update. And congratulations for solving another case.
Thank you so much, Karen. I appreciate it very much. We'll be right back.
This hour of Sound Off was brought to you by Mid-State Precious Metals across the parking lot from the movie theater in Atascadero. Honest, veteran-owned. Buy or sell precious metals with integrity. Monday through Friday, 10 to 3.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com. Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.